And I think we're caught up on the recordings, right?
Yes, Baruch Hashem, we are. And I sent them all out already. Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. Okay. So we're in the middle of discussing the Gemara here on Daf Ches Amud Beis, the Gemara about Tzedakah. And I think we'll just we'll try to finish off today, if we can. So we were discussing several aspects of Tzedakah, but especially the concept of Kviya B'Tzedakah. So again, one more time, just to go back to get where we were and pick up where we left off last week. So the Gemara here talks about, the Gemara here on Ches Amud Beis discusses how many people are required for the collection of tzedakah, how many people are required to determine the allocation of tzedakah. Basically, the Gemara says that collecting tzedakah is an act of srara, some sort of an act of, you know, power or authority. It's an executive act of some sort, and therefore it requires two. And of course, the allocation, very interesting, the Gemara says is patterned, is patterned after the decision-making of a Bezdin, of Dine Mamanus. Very, very suggestive language. Anyways, when the Gemara goes on to question, you know, why tzedakah, why the collection of tzedakah is considered to be an act of srara, because it's not so obvious that that is the case. I mean, you know, people collect tzedakah all the time. We don't look at them necessarily as having, you know, as exercising power. But we're talking about people who are collecting on behalf of the community. But even then, you know, like who calls you up for the shul appeal, you know, do you look at them, you know, as individuals who are exercising srara? Maybe you should. Anyway, the Gemara says that the reason that gviyas tzedakah is considered srara is because there is kfiya in tzedakah. That's what the Gemara says. Maisra Rusa, Dom Rav Nachman, Omer Rabba, Bar Avu is on the, you know, first page of the previous Mar Makomos, and here on Daf Ches Amud Beis, right as we end the short lines, the Fisha Memashkinin Alat Tzedakah V'Afilu Be'erev Shabbos. So the Gemara says, because you can enforce, you can coerce someone to give tzedakah, and you can even, you know, confiscate their property by, you know, entering their home on Erev Shabbos, a time which would seem to be inopportune, a time which, you know, you might want to respect their the urgency of, you know, their preparations for Shabbos, etc. But on the one hand, the Gemara says that the kupa of tzedakah was replenished and, or, you know, revisited in terms of allocations, you know, every Erev Shabbos. So Erev Shabbos is an important time, as well as my suggestion, I believe, which is, you know, that some people, you know, might, you know, kind of invoke, you know, Shabbos, you know, as a way of, you know, evading, you know, their other communal responsibility. That sounds shocking. None of us know anyone who would do that. But in the end of the day, human nature is such that, you know, people, instead of just saying, no, I won't pay, they, you know, find ways to cloak themselves in, you know, a noble conduct, you know, even as, you know, maybe they're fooling themselves, or maybe they're even aware in some cases, you know, that they're cloaking, you know, their behavior, you know, dishonestly. Whatever it is, it's, you know, it's hard to know the details or different explanations given. But at the end of the day, the Gemara says that there is something called kfiya b'tzedakah and even b'erev Shabbos. Then the Gemara questions this and says, Eini v'aksivu b'karti al kol lo chatzav, that the Pasuk in Yirmiyah seems to say that the Rabbonu Shalom gives added or extra protection, you know, for those who, you know, are, you know, pressured by others. And the Gemara goes on to say, Afilo al Gaboi Tzedaka, that refers even to people who are pressured by Gaboi Tzedaka. And finally, the Gemara's answer is, Lo kasha hoda amid, hoda lo amid. That there's a difference between people who can afford it, people who are wealthy, people whose means and wherewithal, you know, is such that, you know, they, you know, really should be contributing, and evading their responsibility is really something that even justifies pressure, even though it's clear from the Pasuk in Yirmiyah that all things being equal, it's very interesting in its own right, that the Ribbono Shel Olam disapproves of, pressuring people, even in a good cause. Very interesting, right? But if a person is amid, meaning he, he's more than capable, so then that's a different, that becomes a greater responsibility and less pressure, both. And therefore, there's an obligation. Hadalo amid. Then the Gemara says, Kehadarav akfe l'rav nasa barami v'shako minei dalad me'azuzei l'tzadaka. That Rava, pressured Rav Nasa Barami, and he, pushed him to give 400 zuz, which is an enormous, sum of money, or at least a substantial sum of money. Okay, so that is that's the Gemara. This isn't the only Gemara that speaks about Kfiya B'Tzedaka. It's not the only Gemara that quotes this story. So let's look for one second, because we're going to need it later anyway to talk about the Rashba. So in the new Mar Makomos that we gave out, that Zev was kind enough to disseminate. So I think on the second page we have, again, mostly we're going to remain in the first group for a little longer, but just to get this interesting Gemara in, the Gemara Talmud Bavli Masechet Ksuvos Mem Tes Omud Beis. That's on page 2.
Line 13.
So just very quickly, the Gemara says, Omer Abilai. The Gemara they're talking about, it's in Ksuvos, right? And it's in that part of Ksuvos. So what's it talking about? The obligation, very, very, no matter what generation, relevant issue, the obligation a father has or a parent has to his children to support them. Right? Again, in different cultures, that support, may be taken for granted and maybe, a legal requirement or not. So, the Gemara has a very interesting, that's what I mean by that part of Ksuvos. It's already the part of Ksuvos, which deals with, the Ksuva and the obligations that, a family, has, that the husband has to the wife, that parents have to their children, both the Daraisa obligations as well as the Tanai Ksuva, support during a lifetime and support, after the person is no longer alive in terms of his estate. So these are really obviously very crucial issues. So the Gemara says that all things being equal, there is no obligation d'oraisa to support children, past a certain age anyway. But, midrabanan, they, legislated that there should be such an obligation. So the Gemara says, Om Rabbi Lo, again, the details are not important for now. I just want to just show another example of Kviya. But of course, the details are really fascinating and they're important for understanding family law. But Om Rabbi Lo, Om Reish Lakish, Bishum Rabbi Huda Bar Chanina, B'Usha Tkinu, then Usha the Meditakana. Some people say that Usha, they just, enforced, what is, the Ikar Hadin, not that it's a typical takana, that's actually a debate among the Rishonim, but B'usha Tkinu, right, Sheyehe Adam Zan Es Bana V'Es Benosav K'Shehin Ketanim, that at least when they're Ketanim, when the children are minors, that there would be an obligation to support sons and daughters. Says the Gemara, Iboi Lu Hilchusah K'Vaseh Wein Hilchusah K'Vaseh. Do we accept this ruling or this legislation, depending on your point of view, or not? Says the Gemara, Tashma. Come and, let's look at the evidence. Ki hava asu lekame Rabbi Yehuda, right? So they came in the presence of Rabbi Yehuda. Amalu, he said to them, again, what happened was it was a din Torah. I guess the children were suing the father, or, somebody on the behalf of the children were suing the father, who refused to give support to his children. So they came to Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yehuda said, Yarod Yalda, right, the Abne Mata Shadya. So, a certain kind of Akhzari, bird, question what it is. It's a dragon, a vulture, or whatever it is, who ignores, you know, he called them basically like you're like a bird, you know, a certain kind of, you know, insensitive bird that ignores his children. So can have you also the comment of Chizra Amalahu, Kofile Asita Bitzibura, Velekim Velema Orva Boi Bane, Bahu Gavra Lo Boi Bane. So the Orva Bo Bane, then the Gemara says, does an Orev really, you know, even support its children? The details are not really important for the moment. The point is that they were trying to shame, you know, this fellow into, you know, not being, you know, like the cruelest kind of bird and not being, you know, less than, you know, other birds, like to have some, you know, sense of responsibility for his family. So Kevah Ostil came to Rava. When they came to Rava, he said, Amarle, right, Nichalach the Mitzani Banech Mitztaka. Instead of calling, you know, trying to use bird mashals to humiliate the fellow into, you know, taking responsibility for his family. So he just, you know, said straight, you know, he said to him, you know, he said, do you want your children, you know, to have to, you know, have, you know, have to be subject to tzedakah? Like you have, you know, the ability to support them and you're going to, you know, refuse and they're going to be obligated, you know, to sustain themselves on the community's, you know, charity. Then the Gemara says, V'lo amaran ela de lo amid, right? That, you know, the legal right, you know, that this father has, you know, to refuse support is only in a situation, at least he's not wealthy. Obviously he has enough or he could get enough that they're trying to shame him into action, but he's not wealthy. Aval amid, but if he really was a person of substantial means, kafina le al korche. So then they would force him, right, to support his children. Ki hadarava kafil rav nasan barami, Afik mine dalid mei azuzi letzedaka, right? Rava, you know, pressured Rav Nasan Barami, same as our Gemara, to give 400 zuze to tzedaka. So the way some of Farshim explain it, even as a matter of tzedaka, they would force him. Or well, are they saying if he can, if there's enforcement for tzedaka, kol shekein there's enforcement when it comes to, you know, parental obligation of mizonos when you have the funds. Anyways. It's a very fascinating area of family law, right? What the, and there might be a difference between, you know, ktani ktanim and ktanim, like, you know, children under six, over six. Very interesting issues. A lot of poskim in more, you know, recent times have suggested that the expectation, you know, that in society, you know, in families, you know, between spouses, in our time, you know, that children, you know, don't really go out to work, you know, until much, much, much later in the cycle, you know, may change, may have changed even, you know, the din of how much support is required as an obligation from parents. Actually, Moshe Feinstein's a tshuva on Negros Moshe about this, about the obligations of Parnassa and the ages in which he makes this, you know, this argument, you know, that Bizmanenu, nobody goes out to work, you know, until they're finished, you know, with a certain level of schooling in their late teens or early, you know, 20s. So does that change what constitutes the expectation, you know, of mizonos? Very interesting question. Okay.
So anyway, how many years of kolel is a father-in-law required to pay for?
No, that, I think that's like dvarim she'en lehem shir. That's like, that's a davar pash. Yeah. Anyways, but yeah. So the, this is a very interesting Gemara, obviously. I mean, applying, you know, even that very sharp comment that Rava made, you know, which is like, you know, do you really want your children, you know, to be dependent upon tzedakah of the community? So there is some sort of kviya. And again, if you look at the Rishonim al-Atar, you know, they all jump in with the same problem that our Tosfos does here in Bava Basra and elsewhere. And that is like, how can there be kviya b'tzedakah? After all, it's a mitzvah saseh shematan schara b'tzeda. And that's, of course, what the Tosfos asks in Bava Basra, and Tosfos asks us in Ksuvos, and the Chachmei Sfarad and all the different places ask it as well. Okay, so we'll get back to the Rishonim in Ksuvos in a couple of minutes. But
What does this say about Rav Nosson? I mean, Rav Nosson, he must have been a Gavra Rabba, and he's an Amid, and they had to force him to get tzedakah.
Yeah, it's a great, they say different things about it, but for sure something needs to be said. That's absolutely correct. You're totally right. So again, the Ritva that we spoke about, which we're going to get back to in a minute, is also on this Gemara. But again, the question that you raised, like what was Rav Nachman's view, you know, in all of this, you know, why did he have to be pushed, you know, in this way? So yeah, I mean, you know, it's life is complicated and situations are complex. Sometimes people feel, you know, that you know, they don't have certain benefit from the community, or they have, you know, they want to impose their own. I'm not saying this is the pshat. I'm just saying, you know, we can use our imagination. You can have somebody who's like a, you know, a respectable person and a moral person, and, you know, who finds himself in some cases, in a very idiosyncratic, or taking a very idiosyncratic stand.
It seems that Rav Nosson was an oxymoron.
What?
I like it. I hear.
or maybe, you know, this was Yesh Breirub, you know, this is what was going to be. So I hear it. Anyways, I what I'm saying is, I think, you know, just because he needed to be forced doesn't mean he wasn't a great man. It could be that he had other, you know, considerations. And Ravo is saying, good, I understand that, but it's not sufficient. And this is our psak, and you have to give no matter what. But as I say, we all know good people who sometimes, you know, find themselves, you know, for reasons of their own principle or misunderstanding, or whatever it is, you know, on, you know, the wrong side of a particular issue.
He probably had children in Kolo.
What?
He probably had children in Kolo.
The Kolo's getting a lot of bashing tonight. I hear that. Okay. He may have thought that that was tzedakah. There you go. Right? Okay. So either way, so what we discussed last week, what we started discussing a couple of weeks ago and discussed also last week, was this problem that Tosfos raises, which all the Rishonim do, which is, what about mitzaseh shematan schar b'tzeda ein bezin shamatan muzharin aleha, which means that typically there's no kviya when the bonus shalom in the Torah is explicit about what the skar ba'onish is. And it seems like that's what we have in tzedakah, because the Torah says in Parshas Re'eh, leman yivarecha Hashem Elokecha. So we spent, you know, a bit of time going through this in the last couple of weeks, but just, you know, to catch us up for a second. So what we saw were different approaches, right? And one approach is, in Ochanami, the Gemara in Chulin, you know, is applicable here, and there really should be no kfiya. And even though it sounds like the Gemara in Ksuvos and the Gemara here in Bava Basra are promoting kfiya, it's misleading. It's not real kfiya. The kfiya that we're talking about in the Gemara is either verbal pressure, that's Rabbi Tam, or I'm just telling you the answers in Tosfos, both Tosfos, or that's one possibility. Or we're talking about like a special obligation. We're not talking about tilchos tzedakah. We're not talking about the mitzvah taseh of giving tzedakah. We're talking about, you know, where the community imposed, or individuals in the community volunteered, you know, to support a certain, you know, good works. And therefore that commitment, you know, is enforceable. That nothing to do with the mitzvah taseh of, you know, of tzedakah. That's one, or that's two of the four answers that Tosfos gives. The fourth answer, or the, you know, number three for us, but number four for Tosfos, that Tosfos gives is, even though it's true that mitaseh shamatim skar b'teda ein bezin shamatim sarin alel, that doesn't mean there's no kfiya. It means that there's no onesh, but there might be kfiya. There's a difference between, you know, meeting out physical punishment and enforcing or even coercing, following the din. So that's a possibility. Another version of that is found in the Ritva, where the a little bit of a different version, and that is that what we mean in Chulin is not that Bezin cannot coerce or enforce or even punish if they so choose. It means that they're not obligated to. In other words, typically Bezin is obligated to follow, the rules of the Torah, no matter what, whether they're happy to or not. In other words, if a certain onesh is a consequence of a certain behavior, then if Bezdin abstains from meeting out that punishment, without good cause anyway, then they're in violation of the the mitzvah, the lab, or the assay in question. But if they, if it's a matan schara b'tzeda, this is the Ritva's version of that answer. If you look here, just back in the first Mar Makomos, look at the Ritva in Rosh Hashanah. Let's go back to that for a minute. One second.
On the first page, line 32, or?
Yeah. Kiddusha Ritva Mesachat Rosh Hashanah. If they choose not to, it's very interesting. That's a little bit different than what Tosis reports from the Yerushalmi. Our Tosis says in the name of the Yerushalmi, if you looked at the previous piece, a little bit different, at least I read it a little different, and that is Ulleritzva near the Hod Ein Bezin was Horna, but Sasation, Matin Scorbetina, Haina Dane and Noshin, okay, Masha Bushamli, Dilhava Moker Avua, the Koftu, Amur Shavku, Hoki Prusha, Incha Musorum Lachriko, Achiasa, Kishar Mitzel Sase, the Momolea Se Sukha Bulubain, Osa Makin, Osa Chate, Say Napsho. So the issue is not that, kviya, the issue is onesh. That's how I read Tosas. I think the way the Ritva is reading this answer is that, Bezin has the, the choice, if they want to apply onshim or not. Typically, they don't have that choice. Typically, if that's what is required by the halacha, by the nature of the offense, then, and that goes for kviya, presumably, and for onesh. Okay. Anyways, either way, according to this answer, the principle in Chulin is just much more flexible than we thought. So either the Gemara in Ksuvis and in Bava Basra isn't really actually talking about real kfiya, or the kfiya based on Saka, that's the first two answers, or this fourth answer, or the versions of this answer, which is that even though something is mitzaseh shemat tzvar b'tzeda, if Bezin chooses, they certainly can be kofet. Maybe they can even be manish. The fourth answer in Tosis is the distinction between where you only have a mitzaseh and where you have also a lav. And we pointed out that that is difficult, and we need to understand that. So towards the end of the last year, I read the positions of the Ritva, and I analyzed the position of the Radvaz, and I want to get back to that. So the Ritva and the Radvaz, each in their own way, have a different answer to this question, a much, much more fundamental answer. What they basically say, I'm streamlining it, is that the mitzvah of tzedakah, in addition to being a mitzvah, or maybe even more than being a mitzvah, is a chiyuv. It's a monetary obligation. And as such, the rule of mitzvah saseh shamatan tzchor b'tzeda ein bezin shamatim v'sarin aleha does not apply to tzedakah. Because even though it is, no one denies that tzedakah is a mitzvah saseh, by the way. It says pasach tiftach, it says, noson titein. Everybody, since the Rambam, anyway, counts it as a mitzvah saseh. That isn't the question. The question is it a routine, you know, mitzvah saseh? Is it only a mitzvah? Or is this mitzvah basically to project a kind of chiyuv mamon, you know, and to kind of redefine, you know, the relationship you have with your neighbor, you know, and, you know, kind of refine how we look at the principle of tzedakah. And this is really, really important if it's true. So what the Ritva seems to be saying is that tzedakah is not just generosity. Tzedakah is a monetary obligation that you owe the, you know, the impoverished. And the Ritva suggests that it's almost like a balchov, you know. But again, you know, those are great fighting words, but when you step back and think about them, it's very shocking, right? Because if I borrow money from somebody and he, you know, lends me money, of course I have to, you know, repay him. Otherwise, I'm a thief, basically. And not only is it quid pro quo, not only is he showed me a chesed, and if it's a Jewish loan, then it's a typical loan. It's a loan without interest. You know, and if it's during the Shemitah year, you know, it's a loan which may be subject to Shemitah's Ksafim. So it's, you know, he's accorded me like an extraordinary chesed, frankly. So in addition to the fact that he's, you know, dealt with me in this charitable way, it's also just, you know, logic, you know, and reciprocity that if I take $100 that belongs to him, then I have to return it to him, you know. So the obligation that a lova has to pay his the malva, you know, is doesn't require so much, you know, a mental, you know, energy to explain. It is a little fascinating, I should add. And this is where maybe psychologically this becomes all possible for the, you know, Ritva in the name of the Ra and for the Radvaz and others. And that is that the Gemara does, in Bava Basra, say that, you know, one perspective, there are two perspectives on why a lova has to repay a loan. One is the Shibud Daraisa. There's like a real indebtedness there. And the other is that it's, you know, there's an aspect of Prias Bal Chov, you know, mitzvah. And the Gemara discusses this, you know, with regard to things like, let's say, the lova is a katan, or let's say the, in other words, the lova dies and he leaves, you know, yisomim katanim, and katanim la b'nei meved, you know, mitzvah ninu. That doesn't exempt them from paying, but it can delay the obligation, you know, to pay until they're gedolim. So there is a mitzvah aspect. According to the perspective that Prias Bal Chov mitzvah, it's almost like, oh, you know, you give me a gift, you know, but then, you know, my obligation, my mitzvah is, you know, to treat it, you know, like a loan. You really gave me a loan, right? You gave me a loan and an interest-free loan, you know, and the way we look at it now is what? Prias Bal Chov mitzvah. So in a way, you know, if you accentuate that part of it, you know, then, you know, saying that a lova pays back because of Prias Bal Chov mitzvah, and saying that a, you know, an ani has the right to demand, you know, from an owner, you know, almost like he's the malva and the other guy owes him money as a lova to repay him. There is a bridging of the gap, you know, when you say both of those things. When you say a lova, you know, is paying back only as a mitzvah, and you say that a, you know, an ashir, you know, is a lova, you know, who owes money, you know, to the ani, you know, both of those are chidushin, don't get me wrong. And, but of course, when you say them both, you know, they're easier, they're more palatable, each makes the other more palatable, and yet they both remain very mechudash. And there's a lot of evidence that even if you hold, you know, the perspective of Prias Bal Chov mitzvah as opposed to pure Shibud Daraisa, that, you know, it's not a mitzvah like any other mitzvah. You know, it's clearly, you know, a much more forceful, you know, requirement because of the quid pro quo and because of the chesed that he did and the fact that you really owe him. So, and by the same token, obviously, you know, even if you're going to say what the Ritva and the Radvaz and others say, which is that, you know, the Ani has a right to make demands on you, and it's almost like you owe him, but in the end of the day, you don't really owe him. You didn't get anything from him. So, how does this really work? But either way, just calling it, just phrasing it that way, both of these, but especially we're focusing on the tzedakah part at the moment, is quite remarkable, and it really transforms how we look at philanthropy, to be honest. And in terms of applying it to what the question that motivated it, we can now understand very well, you know, to say that, oh, bitzasei shamatan skar bitzeda ein bezen shamatan mitzhar nalel, yeah, let's say there's a certain kind of mitzvah, kibud av v'eim, hanik tanik, if somebody had said this, we don't say it, but if somebody had said, oh, lulav or sukkah or shofar or mitzvah sasei shematan skar b'tzeh, they're not. But if they had been, and you would say, okay, so, for that reason, he'll do it or he won't do it, but it's not Bezdin's job, to pursue this. This is between the Ribbono Shel Olam and the person because he's explicated the stakes. All that is very understandable, all very reasonable. But are you going to say that about a monetary obligation? Anything that even smacks of a monetary obligation? You're going to say that the Ribbono Shel Olam said, L'man yarichun yamecha, and therefore it's nobody else's business. But the whole idea of it being a monetary obligation is the idea that it, as opposed to only a mitzvah, is the fact that it's a chiyuv, not just a mitzvah. And there's a certain greater urgency and a greater, an easier justification for enforcement, even coercion. So that's what the Ritva and Radvaz are saying. They're saying it's mitzvah seh shemat and tzchar b'tzeda, but that's not the whole story. Because here, he's also a lova who has to pay back the malva. The ani, has legal rights. Legal rights have nothing to do with matan tzchar b'tzeda, right? Religious obligation has to do with matan tzchar b'tzeda. But if the religious obligation creates legal rights and a legal obligation, then we turn that over to Chosha Mishpat. The fact that we consider it in those terms is a remarkable Kiddush. Once you say the Kiddush, you can understand the rest of it. So that's what the Ritva says. Ritva says in Rosh Hashanah, about Nidrei Tzedaka. And then in Ksuvas, on that same daf that we just read, the Ritva takes it a giant step further. And he says, listen, you could say this only about the Picha Zutztaka, it's a Gzeres HaKasu, but the Picha Zutztaka, or Vyasisa Zutztaka, it's all about a neder. He says, yes, that's true. But the Nidrei Tzedaka is not driven by the neder part. It's driven by the tzedaka part. So if Nidrei Tzedaka are nitan likfia, he says, then implicitly tzedaka is nitan likfia. That's also a huge chiddush. Okay. And then the Radvaz says something very similar. The Radvaz in Perik, Yud, Perek Zayin of Hilchos Matnas Aniyim, Malachi Yud, commenting on the Rambam, is even stronger in his formulation of the idea that an ani is like a malva, like a balcho. And then he goes and he adds, and he says, when the Ribbono Shel Olam says ubechanuni na bazos, when it comes to meiser, he says, in my opinion, it's true with tzedaka too. If you want, you can put the Ribbono Shel Olam to the test. Give tzedaka and test and see whether or not he gives you the reward that he promised you. All that is the Ritva and the Radvaz. So what I wanted to suggest at the end of last week, and I want to elaborate a little more now, is maybe that's what the Ria had in mind as well. Meaning, the Ri's answer to the question of, how can there be kviya? It's against the principle of Matan Skar B'tzeda is, that's true if there's only an essay, but here there's a lot. So as I mentioned last week, Yachronim ask, there are other, mitzvos in the Torah that have an essay and a lav and are still considered Matan Skar B'tzeda. So why, what does Tosas mean here? But what I think it means is that what Tosas is saying is, here the Asay and the Lav, or the fact that there's a Lav, is what catapults tzedakah from being not only, you know, an act of charity and philanthropy, meaning a mitzvah bialma, albeit important mitzvah, but, you know, being a chiyuv. The fact that there's a lo saseh, lo ta'ameitz levavcha, lo tikpots yadcha, that's where the principle of that you have no right to ignore him, or that he has rights to make demands on you, that kol yisrael arevim zeh lazeh, you know, is a kind of literal meaning. Like, what is an arev? An arev is a guarantor, right? That's the idea. The idea is that I didn't borrow the money, but I'm an arev, you know, in terms of being responsible to be the backup debtor, you know, to pay the creditor if the debtor can't do it himself. So kol yisrael arevim zeh lazeh. So v'haftal reyacha kamocha is one part of it. That sounds all very, you know, again, philanthropic, very altruistic. And it is, don't get me wrong. But in addition, sometimes that translates, it's chayecha kodmim v'chayechaverka, that's its limitation. You know, you come first, you know, for an ultimate choice. But anything that is less drastic than that, and you have responsibilities to your neighbor. The Gemara says in Shabbos, on Kufnun Aleph, that tzedakah is a galgal hachozer. You know, when the Torah says in the Psukim that we're going to read in the next few weeks, you know, ki lo techdal, you know, evyon me'amecha, you know, sadly. So the Gemara says it's a galgal hachozer. Meaning, you know, at some point, you know, the people who are wealthy become poor, and then the people become poor, you know, become wealthy, and, you know, it's chozer chali. At some point, everybody, you know, so it's undoubtedly a statement of truth in terms of actuarially, you know, as time goes on, but it's also, you know, has other implications. You know, one of the implications may very well be to justify not only the obligation to give, you know, or to, you know, on a certain level, it's, you know, it's, again, lo ye'er levavcha besitzkalo, you know, in all of its meanings, you know, and know that the institution of philanthropy, you know, is considered so crucial in the Jewish community because it's always necessary. But in addition to that, it's because of the galgal hachozer. It's going to be necessary, you know, for you. It's in your self-interest at the end of the day. You know, therefore, you shouldn't, you know, be begrudging in all this, because these institutions will end up, you know, it'll all even out at some point, number one. You know, it'll equalize. And also, you know, you're investing in something that, you know, might be the indispensable, you know, savior of your great-grandchildren or your great-great-great-grandchildren. Or your children, for that matter. You know, so instead of, you know, lo'yer levavcha, so, you know, again, it's hard to know whether galgal hachozer is just tempering, you know, what could be your bad attitude, or it's encouraging your investment. But, you know, what I'm suggesting is that also, you know, may go a long way to underpinning, you know, this idea of arevos, and this idea even of lova and malva. Right, because, you know, it looks like I'm just giving and he's just taking, right? You know, but, you know, what was going on 200 years ago, or what's going to happen in 200 years from now, you know? So that's just a very different way kind of to look, you know, at the whole issue. So it's interesting to note that, you know, firstly, that the Rambam counts an asay and a lav separately in tzedakah. Not everybody does. Rabbi Stajagon, at least according to Rabbi Yerucham for Shalperla, only counts an asay of tzedakah, meaning the Torah limited clear. The Torah speaks, you know, pasak tiftak, nasam titain, lo ta'ameitz, lo tikvots, at least four psukim that, you know, two on the asay side and two on the lav side, you know, regarding tzedakah. That in itself is interesting. I'll get back to it in just a second. But in terms of minyan mitzvos, the 613, right, that's a different category, a different issue. So the it seems like Rav Sajigod only counts one mitzvah saseh. He doesn't count a separate law. How he darshens the psukim differently, even though the psukim are out there. And the Bahag, it seems, does the opposite. He only counts, I think, a lo saseh, not an aseh. At least that's my recollection. The Rambam counts an aseh and a lo saseh. And Bali Tosis obviously are, you know, I don't know about minyan and mitzvos, but what they're saying is the fact that there's a lo saseh alongside the aseh, that's very significant and important. Now, how, you know, how does this solve one of the problems that we mentioned? The Reis is trying to explain why it's not a mutton scar b'tzeda, and he's explaining because there's also a lot. But the Achronim ask, there are other mitzvos like Chandakas Eved, you know, Havatas, you know, what they call the Mashkon and things like that, where there's an essay in a lab and it's still mutton scar b'tzeda. But I think the answer is, this is what I'm trying to say, is that it's not the fact that there's an essay in a lab or the fact that there's a lab. It's what the lav and what the fact, what are the implications of there being an asein alav here? And that's the point. Meaning, I think that, you know, you can really make the case that, you know, there are two themes in tzedakah. One is the theme of obligation. One perceives tzedakah as a mitzvah like other mitzvahs. Like you're supposed to wear tefillin, put on tefillin every day and, you know, and daven, and, you know, and sit in the sukkah, and go shofar. You know, one of the things you're obligated to do is one of the tariag mitzvos, you know, is to be philanthropic, to be generous, and to give, you know, some of your, you know, material goods, some of your money, you know, for good causes. You know, whether it's, you know, the classic tzedakah of aniyim, or it's, you know, to support the Beis HaMikdash, like a shlish shekel b'shana, right? Or you know, to support, you know, yeshivas or mikvos or shuls or whatever it is. So that there's a mitzvah say, nasan titein pasoch tiftach, you know, that you should spend a certain amount of money, doing good works with your money. It's a din in being matir and machshir your money. You know, it's a din in cultivating the midah of nedivus as opposed to kilus, as we'll see the Rambam says, in Sefer Mitzvos, and so on. So I mentioned this part of the Rambam last time. So that's one aspect. But there's another aspect, and that is the Torah says, lo tikpo tzis yadcha, lo ta'ame tzis levavcha. Makes it seem like that isn't about, you know, bringing yourself to do good. It's more about, like, don't be hard, don't, you know, be tight-fisted and don't be hard-hearted, meaning, you know, in your response to the demands, you know, of poverty, right, you are obligated to be responsive, you know, in the right way. So that, maybe, is about, you know, Kol Yisrael L'Reivim Zeh L'Zeh. That's about the rights of the ani to demand or your obligation to support. You're not like, you know, like how can I, you know, Ratzon Kodesh Baruch Hu L'Zakos Es Yisrael, how can I add up, you know, rack up more schar, you know, for my permanent record? Maybe the essay is about that. But the lab is about, like, you know, somebody's making a demand on you and he has the right to make a demand on you, you know, because of the relationship that you have as members of Klal Yisrael, or because of Galgala Chozer, or because of, you know, the way we look at, you know, your ownership over your money and what you're supposed to be doing with it, you know, vis-a-vis these other, you know, factors. In the end of the day, the lav here isn't just a mirror of the essay, you know, which it sometimes is. It's a different mechayev. So I like to say, tzedakah is a mitzvah and tzedakah is a chiyuv. The mitzvah part is captured by the essay, the chiyuv part is captured by the law. If that's what Tosis has in mind, the Re, then that's the answer is essentially the same answer as the Ra'ah and the Radvaz. he's just kind of capturing it, embodying it by saying, you know what, if there was only a mitzvah, say, this would be like shofar and kibud av v'em and so on. But the lav injects a whole different key of mammon aspect component into this, and that already is nothing to do with the sugyan chulin. Yeah. So I think I mentioned last week that, you know, if you look carefully in the Rambam, Perek Zayin Nukas Matnas Aniyam Halacha Aleph and Halacha Beis, to me, it really sounds that way, that the mitzvah, you know, is, you know, to do good works. And the lav is that you have no right to ignore the plight. It's all about the demand. The lav isn't, oh, if you don't give tzedakah, you also violate a lav. It's if you ignore the plea of the Ani and you know leave him cold, you know, then you violate. It's a whole different circumstance. And one of the things I was trying to be medayik last week was, for example, that, you know, ger toshav seems to be included in the mitzvah sase of tzedakah. Ger v'toshav v'chayimach. It's one of the psukim that's quoted by the Rambam, by the Gemara, and then by the Rambam, in Hilchos Matzaniyim, Perek Zayin. And in Sefer HaMitzvos. But when it comes to the lav, there the Rambam uses the expression achicha. I believe that's limited only to Jews. Because the obligation to do good things with your money as a mitzvah, you know, probably is more expansive and broad. And if you support, I'm not talking about, you know, Ovdei Avodah Zarah, that's Mishum Darkei Shalom. But Gerei Toshav. If you support a Ger Toshav, that's also a good thing. It's also tzedakah. But the obligation, right, to respond to your brother, you know, plight, and you're not, you know, permitted to ignore that, right? And that turns into the equivalent of like a monetary obligation. Ki'ilu, you owe it to him, you know. Whether it's Galgala Choser or just Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh LaZeh or whatever the basis is, as we've been discussing, or because anyways, you know, Prius Bachov is a mitzvah, whatever it is, or all of these. In the end of the day, that it's very hard to say that that applies outside of the family of Kol Yisrael, meaning, you know, it's extraordinary. It's like what the Ramban says, you know, about Shemitas Ksafim and Ribis. As you know, the Ramban, you know, tries to explain, you know, it says, lo yigos achicha, you know, it says, lo nachri tigos, when it comes to Shemitas Ksafim. You should collect your, and similarly, you know, it's lo sashich reyu, you know, when it comes to ribis, you know, but lo nachri sashich. So the, you know, the Ramban in his Perush al Torah says this, he says, like, it looks very discriminatory, you know. It looks like, you know, we only care about the Jews, and, you know, we're just, obviously we are discriminating, you know, in the sense of distinguishing. She says, so what, you know, what justifies that? Very interesting Ramban, right? That he thought he had to justify it. But the answer, of course, is a truth, you know, it's formulated, you know, in such a compelling way. The Ramban says, listen, your perspective is skewed. If you take a step back, you know, why is anybody obligated to lend anybody, you know, money without interest? You know, and even more so, why would anybody be obligated to forgive the debt, you know, every 7 years, you know, of his neighbor? You know, logic dictates that, you know, if I only want to lend you money, you know, with interest, because money, you know, access to money is valuable, you know, then if I want to do that, then that's fine. No one's forcing you to accept the loans under these conditions. There's nothing wrong with taking ribis. And there's not certainly nothing wrong at all, you know, with not forgiving a debt after 7 years. These are both extraordinary acts of chesed, says Ramban. So the extraordinary act of chesed applies among family members. I don't need to, you know, make interest a profit from my brother. And you know what? Every X amount of years, you know, the menschlich thing, or, you know, maybe the obligatory thing, is for me to let my brother, you know, who's been in debt, you know, kind of reset, you know, the situation, let him start off. That's an extraordinary chesed. Of course, you know, that only applies to family members. We're not discriminating against non-Jews. We're just applying an extraordinary level of chesed to Jews. Okay? So in the end of the day, this idea that, you know, the ani has the right to make demands on me, you know, because of whether it's Kol Yisrael or Reivim Zeh LaZeh, but based on the principle of Lo Ta'ametz and Lo Tikpots, you know, and it's almost like I owe him money, like he's the Malva and I'm the Lova. You know, the idea that that would not apply even to a Ger Toshav, that would only apply to a fellow member of Klal Yisrael, it's not discriminatory. The whole thing is just extraordinary to begin with. It's like I'm applying, you know, the Ramban's, you know, idea. So, so if this is how the Asay and the Lav break down, then the Re, in a very cryptic comment, you know, really kind of, you know, he embodied like the whole thing. He says, listen, really, really, this Gemara should be difficult because of the Gemara in Chulin and the principle, you know, that, you know, that it articulates. But since the Torah, you know, is so expansive, there's an Asteh and there's a Lav, i.e., you know, it sees philanthropy as, you know, of course, you know, an act of chesed, but it also sees it, you know, as a monetary obligation of support based on all these different considerations and maybe even more. You know, so once you have that, then it doesn't fall into that, you know, rubric of Mitzaseh Shemat and Zchor B'Seid anymore. Again, if you look carefully in the language of the Rambam, in my opinion, I mentioned this last time, I think, but the Rambam mentions the obligation to support a fellow Ani. Like, does an Ani have an obligation to give tzedakah? That's an interesting question, right? I mean, we just read two Gemaras, you know, one about Mizonos, you know, Banav, and the other about Kfiya B'Tzaka, you know, per se, where the Gemara says, Ha Ba'amid, Ha Ba'loam, Ha, you know, Shalo Ba'amid. Meaning if a person's wealthy and he has the wherewithal, then, you know, it's not called Upakanati Al Lochatav. Even though, you know, mostly the Torah is very, with the Pasuk in Yirmiyah is saying, you know, the Rosh Hashanah doesn't like when you pressure people. Right? It's an amazing thing. Like the special hashkaka for the people who get pressure. Right? But there's an exception if you're amid. Right? Why? Because the Rebbe Hashem doesn't like the wealthy? No. He was a socialist or progressive. You know, no. But because if you're an amid, then that isn't really pressure. I mean, then it's more like you're evading your responsibility. It just changes the entire equation. You know, it's just everything looks different. What am I trying to say? So an amid and a lo amid are categories in these dinim of kfiya in a very subtle and interesting way. However, that, like, you know, it raises a different question. Let's say somebody is not only not an amid, but he's an ani. I mean, he qualifies to be an ani to collect tzedakah. Right? The sugya, I think we mentioned last time, or maybe not, that the Mishnayos in Masechet Peah, right, discuss, you know, who is qualified to receive, you know, matnas aniyim, right? 200 zuz, how many meals can he, you know, can he predictably, you know, put on his table a day? Very interesting issues. So somebody is low amid doesn't mean that they're poor, but let's, you know, low amid is clearly chay b'tzdaka, just the pressure part, the kviya part doesn't apply. But what about an ani? Or an Evion, is he obligated in tzedakah? So the Makoros of Chazal, you know, there's no pasuk, you know, that makes it clear, but it is clear in the Gemara, and the Rambam paskins this way, right? If you look again in Perek Zayin, let's look at that just for a minute. Hilchos Matnos Aniyim, this is in Halacha Hey. Right, what page? This is page. Is this still page 3 or is it 4 already?
4.
Okay, great. So it's halakha hey. Baha ani, the shal de machsoro, right? The ani came and requested, you know, what he is missing. Ein hayad, ein yana nose maseges. The fellow he's asking from doesn't, he's not an amid, he doesn't have enough. Nosen kafi hasagas yado. Shlisha shekel b'shana is the amount that you know was you know given to the for Bedek Habayis. Anyways, kol nosein pakos mizel lo kiyam mitzvah, and then the conclusion of this halacha is the afilu oniyam is parnes minat staka chayiv tzedaka leacher. Well, meaning even ani based on the Gemara, it's fra that med shalacha that even an ani who himself right is misparnis but not staka is chayav litain staka leacher. But in I think if you look carefully and also in sefer mitzvos, you know, is he also in violation of the law? Let's say he encounters a fellow ani and the guy demands of him, and he doesn't give him. I don't think so. Meaning, is an ani chayv in to hear shofar? Of course. Is he chayv in dalad minim? Of course. Sukkah? All the other mitzvahs I say that are mitzvahs? And he's a member of Klal Yisrael. I'm not talking about whether, you know, if he can't afford it, is he onus or how much he's obligated to spend? Forget about that. I'm not talking about that. Is he obligated per se in the mitzvahs? Of course. So why wouldn't he be obligated in tzedakah as a mitzvah? Tzedakah as a, you know, bein adam, you know, lamako. A tzedakah that is also supposed to, you know, cultivate within the midah of, you know, adivut, you know, being of generosity, as opposed to kilut. Like language of the Ram. Although Ram says in the lab, and I think I mentioned last time, that's a problem a little bit. Not so much, but is he obligated like a balchov, you know, to pay for the other ani? Not if he doesn't have. I don't think. So there are numerous differences, subtle, between the assay and the lab of tzedakah. Probably. And if the Gertosha of this, you know. So if that's the case, maybe that's a shot in the ring. So I also wanted to add that, you know, again, the double language, again, why the double mitzvah says asay and lav, according to the Rambam. But really there are two asays and two lavs. Right? And then there's also a double language in each of the essays. Pasach, Tiftach, Nasa, Tite. You know, it's hard to know what to make of these things, but to me, like tzedakah is like the purpose, perfect, like, you know, interface of Benonim Malakom, Benonim Machavero. And therefore, I wonder where all the doubling isn't a way of saying, yeah, this is where these two things are, you know, both apply or they meet. Because think about it, in a way, you know, anything having to do with money, you know, is really testing, you know, the relationship, you know, between, you know, material, olam hazeh, you know, self, not aggrandizement, but, you know, self, you know, hedonism and you know, chayecha kodmim on the one hand, you know, against you know, the competition with and the obligation to, you know, chavero. And the idea that you could take, you know, something as completely material as money, and that could be a basis for bin Adam, you know, lamakom, you know, on the one hand is extraordinary, but also that the expectation would be that you would give it, you know, gratis to chavero, when the whole point of it is the competitive aspect and what it gets you and how it gets you ahead, you know, in goods and services and so on and so forth. So when you think about it, you know, it really is on the border of both and the integration of the two, and in a very real respect. That's why I think tzedakah is so extraordinary. You know, so it's very interesting. The Gemara says in Yevamos that, you know, tzedakah and chesed, of course, are, but, you know, tzedakah as well, specifically, you know, simanim of Ben Avram Avinu. Right, the Rambam in Perek Yud, Hilchos Matnas Tanim, you know, has like a very expansive, one second, let me see if I have it here. He starts quoting a lot of the Divrei Agadata of, one second.
Rabbi Rosenzweig, could I ask a question, please?
Sure.
Pausing from, okay. I was just medayik, I wanted on the Rambam, when it says, Behol haroe ani. The Rambam says it's the only Easter when of Los Ameitz is only when you see the ani.
Right.
It doesn't mean if you stop giving money. And Al-Gemar is talking about that, we're talking about Mishkin and Al-Tzedakah, which means you had a previous debt and you're not giving Tzedakah. The Rambam seems to identify the Easter of Los Ameitz, mamish only, is you see an ani who's mevakesh behelim einavimenu, the lonos al-Tzedakah. Then you have the terrible need of Los Ameitz. Not if you owe somebody money, Dafka.
Tzedakah has nothing to do with
it. Why would Rambam have to say b'chol haroa ani? It could be
right, but you're contrasting it to owing money. We're not talking about owing money.
No, I know. Okay, fine.
No,
Al-Gemar is talking about a pledge that you had. Mamshin and Al-Habtzaka is talking about that you can seize a pledge that you had for tzedakah. Not that the ani is right in front of you.
There are two different points I'm trying to make here. One is I'm saying that the baletosis, by emphasizing that there is a lab, you know, may be trying to get at what the Ritva and the Radvaz are saying, that there is also a monetary aspect to this, not just a mitzvah.
Right.
Now, that's one point. And that is what I'm trying to say for tosis. Now I'm saying something else to illustrate that further. I'm also invoking that the Rambam, you know, when he speaks about the Asay and the Lab, speaks about them differently. And I think you're making a good ha'ara, and that is that one of the things I've been trying to say is that the Asay is from within you. In other words, we'll see in a moment, you're obligated to go find an ani, you know, or a good cause or something to give X amount of tzedakah a year, because that's like, you know, it's like picking up a lulav and you know, hearing shofar and, you know, and going to davening. You're also supposed to give tzedakah. And even if you're an ani, you're supposed to give, you know, tzedakah. And then there's something else, and that is, I think this is what you're pointing out, and I agree with that, that for the Rambam, the lav is a different animal completely. It has to do with ignoring the plight in the context of a, you know, either a confrontation or something else that defines you as turning your back on, you know, the ani. In other words, not that you're not giving tzedakah, it's that you are, you know, rejecting the ani. And I think that's true. Right. And the only thing I don't think is true is that it has nothing to do with the debt paying of debts, because, you know, of course, if you make a pledge, that's a nidre tzedakah. It could very well.
If you didn't give the money, if you didn't redeem your pledge, are you over a coin to Rambam Losa Ameitz Eslabov?
So that's a great question. You certainly would be over Lo Yachel, Tavaro.
Right.
And I'm not sure whether, you know, having made the pledge, does that become the equivalent of, like, you know, turning your back on your obligation? Right. Or is it always like a personal confrontation and never has anything to do with, you know, the voluntary neder? I'm not sure. My suspicion is that you probably would not.
Right, Lefian is that, because the Rambam's lashon is v'chol haroani. Wouldn't the
but the Rambam's not talking about nedarim at all. He's just talking
about. Right, but I'm just.
Right, so that's what I'm
talking about. But he's talking about the
nedarim are a little trickier, right, because you've already obligated yourself. So then to kind of squeeze out of or to ignore your obligation might be the equivalent of, like, you know, bittul, you know, that takes place, you know, in a different context, only when you actually experience or confront. You know, so I'm not 100% sure. My own suspicion is that you're right, that's Bal Yachal Devaro, and that's, you know, a tzedakah violation, but it's not a violation of the law. I think you're probably right. But I'm not 100% sure, just because it stands somewhere in between. Yeah. So I just wanted to take a minute. You know, the Rambam says that in Perikid Halacha Aleph, he's really quoting from the Gemaras and Yavamos and other places. But what's important about that is, you know, like we always joke, you know, or half joke, you know, you know, there's, you know, everybody is, you know, very excited when the Rambam says things are against the Gemara. But when he quotes the Gemara, what's like, you know, what's significant about that? But the answer, of course, is that, you know, when the Rambam quotes Gemaras in an atypical fashion, then that's something to note as well. Meaning, he doesn't very often quote Divrei Agada. And if he does, you know, he certainly isn't very expansive about it. But the whole Perek Yud, Hilchos Matnas Aniyim, right? And if he does quote, he'll quote the last halakha. But Perek Yud, Hilchos Matnas Aniyim, is very much dominated by these Divrei Agada about how important tzedakah is. So Chayavan Anilizar b'mitzvah tzedakah, yes, sir, mikol mitzvah tzaseh, right? That's already a big statement. Shat tzedakah, simen the tzadike, zera Avram Avinu, shenemar ki dativ l'man asher yitzaveh, ve'en kisei yisrom b'tkonein, v'dato emet omedet, ela b'tzedakah, shenemar b'tzedakah tekoneini, he keeps going on. That's like, you know, kolamalim einav minaani in Perek Zayin that we were just talking about in Halakha Beis. Kolamalim einav minatstaka reza nikra blial kamosha nikra ovid avarazara blial uba avarazara homer and so on. Kolanosin stakal ene b'sefer panim ros panav. And so on, meaning in Perek Yud, the last chapter of Matnas Aniyim and the closing chapter of Hilchos Tzedakah, part I'm trying to make is the Rambam is very expansive in quoting Hashkafa and Dibrei Chazal. And, you know, I think at minimum, that's just very interesting. Obviously, it shows the urgency that he attaches or assigns to Tzedakah. But I think it's more than that. I think he's right. It's like, you know, it's a simen l'tzadike zera Avraham Avinu. It's, you know, part of the pedigree of Kla. We say Yisrael machmonim, bnei rachmonim, you know, non-Jews are more achzarim. That's why, you know, we have the shear of, you know, pruta, and they don't. Things of, you know, many, many other examples of that. But I think, you know, being part a simen of Ben Avraham Avinu was the paradigm of both, Ben Aron L'Malkum, Ben Aron L'Chaveiro, both. Right? He's the one who found the Ribono Shel Olam. And he's the one who, you know, also established, you know, the principle of Elokei, you know, Hashamayim Elokei Haaretz. And of course, he was the Amun HaChesed, we know that. And he was Mekabel, you know, Pnei, you know, Hashchina, but he was docha that seemingly, you know, for Akhenasas Arkin. But again, as I like to say, he, as an internal matter, he thought that the best way to express, the best way to express Kabbalah's Pnei Hashchina was through Akhenasas Arkin. So this interface of, you know, Ben Aron L'Malkum, Ben Aron L'Chaveiro, you know, this idea that, you know, Elokei Haaretz, you know, that this worldly, you know, dimensions of human life, you know, are also subject to mitzvot. And then in some respects, they raise the ante, you know, and they even more in some respects than pure Ben Aron L'Malkums are Ben Aron L'Malkums, because they really show your really devotion and where it comes from. It's a big idea in, you know, in tzedakah. So the asay, the lav, the double essence, the double lab, and the double language in the double essence. I think it's all meant to say, like, you know, this is, you know, it's been on the Makam, it's been on the Chavero. Each one is feeding the other and mutually enhancing the other. So it's like very interesting in general in tzedakah, you know, about, you know, certain issues. For example, you know, is there, you know, just how do you look at tzedakah itself? You know, you look at it as, you know, from the perspective of the nosin or from the perspective of the, you know, of the makabel. You look at it as an opportunity or as an obligation. Right. So this is the famous discussion that the Gemara has on page one of last week's Mar Makamos.
You know, the Rav, before you leave the Rambam, can I just interject? Yeah. That Rambam, there's a famous, I like this. The Rambam, when he ends off Perek Yud, he writes, if you force people to give tzedakah, he doesn't differentiate like an Al Gemara whether someone's an Ashir or an Ani. He quotes the Pasuk, it doesn't say anything about, oh, you only can pressure people to do it if the person is a usher. The Rambam's saying, if you are the kofeh, then you get more schar than the person who's giving tzedakah. And I want, Lefian Azdake, I want to ask you, could that be one of the reasons why, even though it's that the matan schar is betzidon, this is, when you're kofin, your mamish become more than the baal tzedakah. So that's where you want to be, well, a kofin.
In other words, it's an interesting point. I'm going to get back to the one. I want to go a little more. I don't have time now because we have to stop. But I want to finish just next week with, I want to go a little bit more. That's what these extra Mar Makamos were. But what is the level of kfiya? Is it yored l'nechasav or yored only l'fanav? So I do want to still speak about that. And we'll see whether the Rambam has the category of amid and lo amid.
I'm also saying that could be one of the reasons why, even though it's matan schar and betzidon, it's different because the person that is kofin is getting schar greater than the baal tzedakah. So therefore, you want to be kofin. You are benefiting by being a kofin, according to Rambam, because he says whoever's masha
that problem is not the problem of, like, you know, Nebuch the Kofa, you know, feels badly and he doesn't want to do it, but, you know, can he be Kofa the Kofa? It's more about being Kofa the, you know, the Nosei. So, right. I mean, Godol ha, you know, ha.
Godol ha Kofa, Mina Nosei.
Mina Ose, for sure. So there is that aspect. The Chassam Sofer has a very beautiful comment where he says that the Sandik of the, why is the Sandik so special in a bris? He says, you know, because he is facilitating, you know, the Milan Gadol, you know, Hama'asa Yosem and Osa. So I hear it, but let's see next week very, very briefly. We're not going to spend so much time, but on, you know, and we talk about the level of Kfiya. Let's see whether the Rambam does or doesn't, you know, codify, you know, Amid and Lo Amid, because if he does, it could be that that's just, you know, you have to take that together with what he says in the end. So I will discuss about that. The Rambam never ever relates to this question directly to my knowledge. I mean, the question of Mitzvah Shemat and Schar B'Tzeda. I think there could be different answers, obviously, but I hear what you're saying. But mostly the problem in Kfiya, you know, in Matan Schar B'Tzeda is about the, you know, the, it's not, you know, that there's not sufficient reward for the kofa, as I say. The problem is whether this is justification, you know, to, you know, to coerce, you know, the nose. So I'm not sure if that would help for that problem. But either way, I do think it's a good ha'ara. And we should look about the question of Amid and Lo Amid for sure. I just want to finish off with one very quick issue, and then we'll pick up with that next week. And that is that when the Gemara, you know, records this discussion between Rabbi Akiva and Tarnas Rappus, in a way, it, you know, on the you know, in another daf and a half on Yud Amud Aleph, which I have here on the Mar Makamos, second entry of the first page. So it's, you know, it looks like just like, you know, the usual affair, like an interesting exchange. And of course it is. But in addition to the interesting exchange, there's also like two very different perspectives on tzedakah. I mean, because this Imalokechem Oevaniyim, Ipneima Einem Mefarnasam, this is the famous question. Right? If the Rebbe Shalom loves the poor, how come they're poor? So Amar Lo, He answered him, Kedisha Nitzal Anu Medina Shel Gehenna. I think what that means is that it's an opportunity for the no sane, right, to do good. So that's, you know, an accentuating, you know, Tronis Rappus was saying, like, you know, look at the Ani as a victim. And Rabbi Kiva was saying, the Ani is not a victim, the Ani is a hechetimtzi for a mitzvah saseh, you know, beinonim lamako. So that's the continuation. Zu shela shal Tronis Rappus Rasha Rabbi Kiva, im lokechem oi vaniyim, mepneim ainim, mepneim afarnasam. Amalei kadesh shal nitzal anu bidina shal gehenna. Amalei adarabba, zu shem mechaivim legehenna. Em shal lecham mashal ma adover dom, ala melech basa vadam, shakos al avdo, right? V'chav shal bebeis asurin, v'tziva lav shal lo lachil aval shal lo lashkoso, right? The king got angry at his servant and he threw him in the dungeon and he commanded that he should be, you know, treated in a demeaning way. V'halachad amechad, and you know, somebody defied his orders and made sure the guy was, you know, living a pretty good lifestyle in prison. So right? So if the Ani is found disfavor in the eyes of the Rabbanu Shel Olam, you're not doing any favors to the Rabbanu Shel Olam. You're only doing, basically, you're helping the Ani, you know. The whole perspective is that in tzedakah, your philanthropy is helping, your altruism is directed to the recipient. He's also adding, and you know, you're also going to antagonize, you know, the person who put him there. But Amalei Rabbi Kiva, Em Shel Chamashal, Madav Adam, and the Melech Batsav Adam, Shekasal Beno, Chamshav Beveis Asher, Tziva Lev Shel Olak Kivol Nashko. So, V'Halach Adam Echad Bechil Vishko, Kishom HaMelech Lo Doron Meshagar Lo. Anu Kriim, but it's just like such a beautiful exchange. Meaning the Ani isn't somebody who's alienated and estranged from the Rabbanu Shel Olam, you know, or if he is, he's still banim. So helping him is also basically, you know, and the motivation in a way is binanam lamako. You know, there's an opportunity for you to score points with the Rabbanu Shel Olam. So the Ani here is mostly like a hechetimtzi. So what is it? The Ani is a hechetimtzi, or the Ani is the recipient of your largesse? Maybe that's the assay and that's the los assay. Either way, those are both true on some level. So I think I mentioned last week already that, like, there's an interesting discussion. Maybe I'll pick up, you know, with another aspect of it next week when we finish this. You know, is there a lishma in the mitzvah of tzedakah? You know, because again, if it's a mitzvah ben adam lamakom, and it's about the nosein, you know, then why he's doing it, his motivation, all that is important. But really, if the idea is, you know, that it's a kind of arvus or balchov, you know, or galgala chozer, you know, or, you know, the mechayev is just to make sure, you know, that the fellow, you know, is able to manage. You know, then there doesn't have to be lishma as long as he writes the check. So that's the famous, I think I mentioned it last week, I'm not sure. But I think I did, Sifrei in Parshas Ki Tzeitzei, say that if a person's walking on the street and money falls out of his, on the one end there's a Gemara Babat, the next Gemara seems to say there's a concept of lishma. You know, and Rabbeinu B'chayin, Kara Kemach mentions lishma. And so on. Beis Halevi has a whole drasha about it in the Tshuva's Beis Halevi. But on the other hand, there's this sifrei that says a person can walk in the street, money falls out of his pocket unwittingly, someone else picks it up, meaning an ani picks it up and it helps him. So he gets some credit, you know, in tzedakah, even though he didn't know he did it. But his, you know, his money is, so if you look at this as kind of a chov, you know, he paid back his debt. Or he's paying his debt. His money, you know, is being used, you know, to sustain fellow Jew. So there are a lot of issues. What about an onein? What about osek mitzvah patam and amitzvah? Which the Gemara does apply to ani. You can be pater from tzedakah based on osek mitzvah patam and amitzvah. It's a sugya of shomer aveda. Shomer aveda, according to one view in the Gemara, is a shomer sachar because of that. Because, well, he's know, being metapel with the Aveda, you know, he's potur, doesn't have to answer the door, you know, when the Oni knocks. So again, from an Asay point of view, that makes sense. I guess once he sees the Oni, according to the Rambam, you know, that's a different story. You know, Osik Mitzvah Potter Mitzvah applies to Esed, doesn't apply to Lavin. But there are all sorts of really interesting things. Do you make a bracha on Staka? We don't. Why don't we? Because it's Ben Adam L'chaveiro? Or because it's, you know, not a Dover Sheish B'Kitzvah? Well, what? There are all sorts of issues. You know, it's just very hard to classify tzedakah as being, you know, ben on makom or ben on lachavero. And I think it's because it's both. And it's also like kind of an interface between them in the ways that we were discussing. So I want to talk a little more about that next time. And especially, I just want to finish up by examining more closely two couple of things. Number one, you know, whether issues in tzedakah are considered to be mitzvos and isurim on the one hand, or mamon, like safek and nedarim and things like that. And in terms of actual, you know, mimashkinin or shibudim, you know, what are the parameters of that? Can you actually compensate somebody's property, you know, completely? Or is it only befun of or not even befun of? You know, there's kfiya, but in the end, yes, for it not to be gezel, you have to actually really give it. So I want to discuss all those things when we finish up. Hopefully this topic, maybe it's Hashem next Monday. Okay. So hold on to the Mara Makomos. Sorry, you went a little overtime tonight, but we'll, food for thought.
Thank you.
Good night. Okay. Cultivate a great week for everybody, to everybody.